Now here's a story about a woman with dreams, so picture perfect at 13 and Ebony Queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I could see a tear fall slow down a black tee.
People, welcome back to another episode of my podcast, Cricket Talks. And this is episode 7 you're about to listen to. The intro went horribly wrong. I'm looking at the editing now, so I thought I'd make a quick intro for you guys. This is episode 7. I'm going to be talking through the second test between Pakistan and New Zealand, kind of summarising it. And yeah, man, enjoy.
Yes, people, welcome back to another podcast episode. And yeah, I'm not in the mood to be doing this one, to be honest. This is going to be talking through what was day 4, I think, of Pakistan-New Zealand, the second test. And then we're going to kind of talk through the test as a whole in a little bit briefly. So obviously, I didn't do day 3's episode. And yeah, it wasn't the greatest, to be honest. We messed up bad. New Zealand got total control of us. And we were made to set up, we were made to trail by about 390-odd. Put a score on top of that within 2 days and have New Zealand chase it to win. Stop New Zealand chasing it to win. And yeah, that obviously, there was no chance of that happening. The other option was for Pakistan to just bat it out and try and take the draw across the 2 days, which itself across 2 days, when they just took out for 297 in the first inning, which is arguably one of our best performances, and then having a sort of scrambling first test where we were really struggling for runs. The idea of us batting a whole 2 days wasn't the biggest opportunity either, especially with the fact that we only had 9 wickets because Shaun Rasood got out in the last 10 overs of New Zealand's day to bat when they made us bat after declaring for 6-5-9. So we had 11 overs to bat, which from New Zealand's point of view was obviously the smartest move to make. They were just churning runs that entire day. Kane Williamson's 230, I think. Daryl Mitchell got his 100 batting like 7. Henry Nicholls got his 150. And, you know, they just churned out runs, churned out runs, churned out runs, constantly putting us under pressure. And they get left up. They somehow managed to still leave out 11 overs for us to bat, which they got their first wicket of Shaun Rasood. Now, talking through Pakistan's second innings, it was really disappointing. Like I said, Shaun Rasood got his wicket. So essentially, we had nine. The two options were, there was no way we were going to put out a win. It's as simple as that. We can't put out four. We can't chase 390 and put up a respectable score that we think we can bowl them out for less than that number. So that was completely out of the option. And like I said, just being able to bat out two days was a small possibility in itself. And the idea was, at this point, the chances of New Zealand bowling us out and taking 10 wickets across 2 days was much greater than Pakistan being able to bat out 2 days. And, you know, 10 wickets, 390 to bat out. So if you weigh it up, New Zealand always had the upper hand, to be honest. They took that from the very first instance where they had the toss, and they've kind of been dominating against Pakistan since that point. So in my mindset, I was sort of thinking, you know, Pakistan, just bat out how many overs you can. It's like, let's not look for runs. Runs will always come, as they always do. You know, if you bat out, if you manage to bat out 2 days, we'll probably end up making 350, maybe 360, if you really, really, really push for it. And as much as that wasn't happening, you know, in my mindset, I was just thinking, you know, just bat it out. There are going to be bad balls and you just take those. But like, for example, Kane Williamson, was how he was batting, just making your risk absolutely zero, not putting any shots down that you don't feel 100% on whatsoever. If you looked across at him, any balls that, you know, even if they were outside off and they were full and wide, he would still leave them, because unless he was in completely in his comfort zone, because there was literally no need. And you saw that he was a little agitated at the start of his innings where he scored that 230, but you saw later on he was just leaving balls, making Pakistan push, and, you know, really push hard for his wicket. And then eventually it'd lead up to a, you know, bad ball, or a ball that's completely out of their line, or just missing a hint of the line, going a little bit too straight if they're swinging it, or, you know, going a little bit too length when they're trying to bowl fuller. And that's when Kane Williamson capitalised, and he kept doing that. He put up his 230 of 364 balls. So he was by no means, you know, slashing them around. He did it at a 65 strike rate. So that's essentially the mindset I wanted Pakistan to bat in. There was no way any of our players were going to score 230, but at least we could hope that we could, you know, take the game as far as we could and maybe just fatigue New Zealand a little bit and then capitalise at that point. So in my mind, I was hoping that we'd reach maybe 280 before being all out, something like that. But obviously it wasn't meant to be. I wasn't impressed by Abid Ali. Yes, he's put up 20 scores when Sean Masood has barely been scoring runs. He's got 3 ducks this tour. But that innings when, you know, I don't know what his mentality was going into it, but it looked as if he was looking to attack, whether he was just going out, you know, we've lost the game, let me just go for it anyway. And he was playing streaky shots, a bit like Azhar Ali in the first innings when he scored that 93. And he was, at the start of his innings, he was playing shots that were outside his off stump, swinging out, and he was getting caught. He was scoring the ball aerial around gully point and backwards point. And that was kind of how Abid Ali was batting, which is out of the norm from what I've seen of him anyway. Abid Ali is someone, you know, who looks very, very disciplined when he's batting. He doesn't really take any chances unless he needs to. And that was, from what I've seen of Abid Ali so far, that was out of the ordinary. And especially in the context of the situation, it looked as if that he was just going all out at this point. Mohammed Abbas did what he could. He's an eye watchman. Azhar Ali was actually looking very, very good, to be honest. I was impressed with him in the second innings. Yes, he got out 37 of 98. But some of the shots he played were really nice. I think he was unlucky the way he got caught out. If I'm not wrong, Jameson flipped to the other side of the wicket, bowled one at length and just caught him out at hips, where he was, you know, stuck between either playing it or leaving it. And that's where he got out. Fawad Alam got his wicket. Can't remember exactly, but I know it was nicked. Mohammad Rizwan, he got bowled out to one that nipped back into Jameson, if I'm not wrong. And you know, Rizwan has kept up a fairly high strike rate this whole tour, to be honest. And if you look at some of his scores, he was scoring 60 of 70 runs. And they looked like proper runs. They were by no means, you know, slamming the ball everywhere he could. They were proper cricket shots. And he was just rotating the wicket, hence being able to keep up such a high strike rate. But he just got a really good delivery from James. And there wasn't a huge amount he could do about it. And he got out for 10 of 18. Fahim Ashraf did what he could, put up resistance, 28 of 65. Zafar Gourhood was where it kind of, you know, ended out. He was the last all-rounder before you had the bowlers. And, you know, he took 16 balls to get off the mark. But the first ball that he did get off the mark with was a straight drive back down the ground. And that was really good. And he played a really nice innings, 37 of 64. That's his second 30-plus score. He was not out in the first innings, if I remember correctly. And you know, where he plays, there's not a huge amount for him to be able to do. He's not going to be able to score in the position he's batting. When he's batting, it's either we're going to have someone really high up just anchoring the rest of the innings, or we're going to have Shaheen, Nasim and Abbas as his partners. So with the position that he's in, he's not having the ability to score, you know, 50s and 60s very well, unless he really pumps up the strike rate and goes for it. So with the performance he did, I was very happy with him in terms of batting. And bowling is a whole other situation. And there's something I want to go over at the end about that, but I was very happy with his batting, to be honest. And I think Pakistan fulfilled that goal when they took out Yasir Shah and brought in Zafar Gourhood, because as far as I know, they took him out. Yasir Shah he bowled a good amount of overs in the first test, but it wasn't, you know, the point that it was a turning wicket, and Yasir Shah, as he is one of the best spinners in the world in test cricket, would have made a massive impact, especially in this one when there's a lot of dew. So with Zafar Gourhood, they still have that spin option to bowl 20 odd overs if they need to, but they also have a decent batting dimension to him as well, which Yasir Shah doesn't necessarily provide. You know, he has scored 100 against Australia in Australia, but you know, he's not by no means any reliable batsman. So Zafar Gourhood provided that 30 plus scores both innings. So I was very happy with the role he played and the goals that I'm guessing Pakistan set for him to achieve on debut. I know it's debut, but you know, he's achieved what Pakistan wanted to do in both tests. And going into the South Africa tour, where they have the likes of Keshav Maharaj, the other left-arm spinner from South Africa, who's got tons of wickets, I wouldn't be surprised if Zafar Gourhood gets another chance to play. I actually really hope he does as well. Shaheen Afridi, 7 of 26, and Nasim Shah, 0 of 1. We got out for 186, which, you know, it isn't ideal. I'm annoyed. We have to go home. I'm more annoyed at the fact that the loss was about, I'd sorry say, a 60-70% chance of us losing the game when New Zealand put up that 6-5-9 for 6. But I was more unhappy with the fact that we didn't provide more of a resistance, as much as it's a lot to ask for when you're in a losing cause. I would have hoped that Pakistan put up 250, 300, at least put up a little bit of a fight to go down. But you know, New Zealand really did skittle us. In terms of their bowlers, you've got to give congratulations to Kyle Jameson. This is his fourth 5-4, I think, in 6 test matches. He's got a stupid strike rate. He went for 20 overs, 48 runs, 6 wickets and 2.4. He had 10 wickets in this test match. And the way he's going, I'm properly excited about the future of Kyle Jameson. Kyle Jameson, if you compare him, he's actually... Shout out to Shots Journal, Pace Journal, all run by Shabazz, but they actually did an interview, which they're doing right now, with Kyle Jameson, and they talked about how he actually went into the team as a batsman, but in the Under-19 World Cup, he had a lot of coaching around him, which helped him develop his bowling, and at that point, he developed his bowling a lot more, and it's been very, very good to see that someone at 6'8" isn't necessarily just bowling short and back of a length every delivery. He's extremely smart and he's using his, I'd say he has a pretty good cricket IQ already, despite just playing a few six test matches. In the fact that he's caught out Abu Dhabi quite a few times. He's taken 10 wickets in this test match, taken out the top, by no means taken out the tail enders. He's got Masood, he's got Abu Dhabi, he's got Azhar Ali, he's got Harris Sahil. So like I said, he's not taking any small wickets by any means. He's taken the big fish out. And I think Nikhil he does a lot of work in the Caribbean as doing presenting and that sort of stuff and commentary. He was talking about it. Kyle Jameson is looking like a really, really good prospect. In terms of players you can compare him to, you're straight away thinking of the likes of, these are big pools, but Shane Watson. In terms of people at the same position at him right now, Cameron Green. I think I'd say they're very similar players, height, bowling and batting, being all-rounders. I think Cameron Green is a little bit more of a batter in domestic cricket, whilst Kyle Jameson is focused a little bit more on his bowling. But you guys probably understand the concept I'm trying to come up with. So Kyle Jameson, a really exciting prospect, and I'm looking forward to how he performs actually outside. Because at home, he's been performing the most that you could ask of him. He's taken 10 wickets in a test match. He's on his 4th 5-for in test cricket in just 6 test matches. And they've got Bangladesh and South Africa to play, I think, in the next 2 months. So when New Zealand do announce an away tour, which I know New Zealand don't play a massive amount of international cricket anyway, it'll be really interesting to see how he performs overseas. And if he can do that, then we're honestly looking at a really exciting prospect going into potentially the next T20 World Cup, where he'll be, a valuable player. He's not half decent. He's not half bad as a fielder. All New Zealand players are generally good fielders. He performs with the ball. He performs with the bat. So it'll be really, really interesting to see how that all pans out, especially, with Cameron Green, like I mentioned. For the test as a whole, from Pakistan's point of view, what can we take away? In terms of selections, Shaan Masood's got a very, very important next tour to play with South Africa. Whether Imaam Ul-Haq manages to recover by that time, it's going to be interesting to see how PCB play out. I think Abu Dhabi would probably stay on anyway, but Shaan Masood and Imaam Ul-Haq, who's going to be the opener? Imaam is having a pretty good career. He actually is a little slept on, in my opinion, but I think that's just because of the amount of cricket that's played. He doesn't feature in the T20 side, that Pakistan plays a lot of T20 cricket. So that's probably why he's not talked about as much, but he is honestly doing very well as an ODI and test player. In ODI, I think he's averaging around 40. Yeah, so in ODI cricket, he averages 52.4. In test, he's only averaging 25. But if you remember against Sri Lanka, he scored a 100 on debut. During 2017, 2018, if I'm not wrong, I think it was 2017, it was when Mickey Arthur was in charge. And he honestly is he's a technically sound player, and it'll be really interesting to see how that all turns out. In terms of bowlers, I'd probably say Nasim Shah was obviously the most disappointing bowler from the bunch. Fahim Ashraf yet again proved himself. I have no doubts and concerns that he won't be in the South Africa tour, and I'm sure he'll be played in all 3 formats. He's been extremely impressive with both ball and bat. He's provided some crazy good knocks for Pakistan. He had that obviously 91 in the first test. He's put up some handy 30-20 scores. He scored a 48 in the first innings of the second test match, I think. Yeah, 48 in the first innings. And with the ball, he's just been bowling a good line and length. He isn't too... he honestly wasn't someone I think would be that disciplined in his bowling, but he is. And hats off to him. Nasim Shah, like I said, probably the most disappointing. But with the age he has, I think PCB are still going to give him a little bit more time. He has had quite a few disappointing spells so far, and Pakistan haven't really done anything about it. And for me, like I said, I think he just needs more time on the domestic circuit. There is a Gadi Azam Trophy that just finished, so I don't see why they shouldn't have played him in that, giving him a whole tournament to improve his skills and just gain some more experience. But, you know, he's going into the test side with 16 first-class games to his name. And it's really his speed which I guess caught out of Pakistan. And that's probably it. I think Sahil Khan, it's going to be interesting to see whether Sahil Khan does get a chance in the South Africa tour. In terms of other players, you know, Fawad Alam will probably keep his place. I think Haris Sahil, it's going to be weird to see Haris Sahil. It's going to be dry wickets in South Africa. If there are dry, the games that there are dry wickets in South Africa, I reckon Haris Sahil can still play. But Babar Azam will be hopefully be back for the South Africa tour. Fawad Alam should stay. Rizwan, it's been really good to see. It's been really good to see him step up as a captain. Like I said in the last Cricket Talks Extra episode, he hasn't made any too bad decisions, to be honest. And, you know, he's put up runs pretty much every test match. I think the second innings is the only time where he scored above less than a 50, where he got out to Jameson for 10. But apart from that, he scored 50s in the last 7-8 test innings that he's played. And three of those he's captained in. So very happy with Rizwan's response as a captain. And that pretty much sums up. If you guys want to let me know what you thought of the tour, who stood out the most from the Pakistan side, the New Zealand side, who do you think's position is at risk the most from Pakistan? I think New Zealand's, all the players are pretty much stood up, to be honest. I'd probably say maybe Santner, but he did perform at the back end of the first test, if I'm not wrong, but he took a couple of wickets even with an injured bowling hand. So let me know who you think performed from the New Zealand side the best and the worst, and any selection changes you think will happen for the next tour, which is in South Africa in just about a month, I think. So let me know who you think will be selected in that. If you're listening to this on audio, please follow Cricket Talks like you are listening it to it right now. If you're on Apple and you're listening to an Apple podcast, then follow us, rate us, review us. I think that's what you can do. If you're listening to this on YouTube and you're watching me talk about it, subscribe, like, comment. If you're watching this in audio, then please jump over to YouTube and subscribe to me. I post a lot of visuals now to do with cricket. And that pretty much sums up Cricket Talks Extra episode 8. Episode 9 may or may not be about India, Australia first, the third test. They're 1-1 right now, and day one was just happening last night. So I'm not sure whether I'll talk about it. We'll just see how it all goes. But Navdeep Saini made his debut as far as I know, and Will Pukowski also made his debut, and it was rain delays in the first day. So whether I talk about it is a whole other thing, but I will be back for the Pakistan South Africa tour. So until then, I'll see you guys on the next episode of Cricket Talks. Now here's a story about a woman with dreams, so picture perfect at 13 and Ebony Queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a sequel, so it took a while. I can see a tear fall slow down.